everyone. I'm Jen.
I'm Anthony, and this is Bottom Bracket Biking Podcast,
a couple's guide to biking.
Hello, and welcome to episode 12. This episode, we're going to be talking about a trip we went to, what's it called?
Moab,
Utah. Yeah, you may have heard of it. It's kind of like the best place to mountain bike ever.
It is also 16 hours away from us, which made getting there a little bit of a logistical challenge. We'd actually planned on going to Moab last fall, and that didn't happen, and then potentially this spring, and that didn't happen. So this is the third trip attempt, and we finally made it work. But yeah, it was definitely a long drive to get there.
The drive from Des Moines was 16 hours, right?
Yes.
And we did that in two stints. We drove out to Boulder.
Yep, that was 10 hours. That was not too bad.
And then we drove out to Moab. So we did the mountains in 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine. Between Colorado and Moab, there's nothing.
Yeah, we got into Utah, and it was just like this wide open desert. Like, it was gorgeous, but you go past signs, they're like, next service, 59 miles. You're like, wow, I really hope we don't have anything go wrong out here.
Yeah, apparently past Moab, there's some more stuff, but between the border and there, just 85 and wait.
Yeah, make sure you fill up with gas before you hit the Utah border.
So we got into Moab. There was some construction, which was fine. And then we went to our condo area. We got it on Airbnb. It was just south of Moab.
Well, that's not the first thing we did when we got to Moab, though.
What did we do first? Oh, we went to Slick Rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we met some Iowa friends, and we went to Slick Rock, which I've been there before. Jen has not. So I thought it'd be a great intro to Moab. Yeah, that should tell you about how that went.
It also turns out that when Anthony was there last time, he only did the practice loop. So, of course, he would remember it as, like, this fun, you know, moderately difficult trail.
Yeah.
Not too long.
Yeah, nice little short trail. And then we did some other stuff for the rest of the day. Not the 2-hour, 11-mile slog that I went through.
Yeah, so there was three of us riding. It was me and Anthony and our friend Genesis. And we realized about, a quarter mile in, maybe half a mile in, that this was going to be harder than we expected. So, and it was also our first day in Moab. You know, we were not used to the trail. We were not used to the elevation. We were not used to the desert.
Oh my God. Yeah, all these excuses. The trail is a Black Diamond trail. You don't need excuses. It's freaking hard.
I think by the end, I might have been more comfortable doing it. Moral of the story is Genesis and I decide we're going to go ride the practice loop, and that ended up being a lot of fun because then we had time to stop and session things and not worry about, you know, running out of water before we could get back.
Anthony decided he was not going to be defeated by a measly 11 miles of trail, and not completely boneheaded, as I had enough water and food for a 4-hour bike ride. So I figured if I made 2 miles per hour, I would finish before I ran out of food and water, and I was fine. But holy cow, Slick Rock is a cardio workout like none other.
It was really cool. Like, once I got the feel for it, you know, you can go up stuff or down stuff or around turns that normally I'd be freaked out by. So that's definitely one that when we go back, I want to hit again after I know what to expect.
Would you care to explain why you can go up stuff like that?
Because it's basically, you're like riding on sandpaper, essentially.
Yeah, the whole trail is this giant Slick Rock, well, obviously.
Sandstone.
Yeah, it's sandstone. And so you can ride on it as if you're on a paved trail, but it's everywhere. So you can go up crazy steep stuff. You and Genesis met someone.
We did. We met Steve from Hardtail Party. It's a YouTube channel if you haven't heard of it, and you should check it out. Genesis watches his channel quite a bit, so she recognized him and was crazy excited. So this actually led to a really fun ride later in the week that we'll talk about in just a little bit.
Yeah, and they turned out to be pretty cool. But after that, we went to the condo, right?
Yep, so couldn't check in until late afternoon, so headed over there.
So we got a condo, or an Airbnb. It had a couple rooms in it, and originally we had gotten it because it was actually cheaper than the rather expensive hotels.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to COVID, the hotels got real cheap.
And also thanks to COVID, this had been planned as a group trip to start with. So we had 3 bedrooms at the Airbnb, which could have been really fun to have bike friends. But we ended up having Genesis and her fiance stay there for one night, and that was it. So not quite the trip we'd planned, but still a good time.
And I mean, considering all the COVID concerns, we had basically our own little area, which is probably the safest, or is the safest way to do it.
Yeah, I think it worked out for the best, all things considered. It's just not exactly what we envisioned.
So on day two, we went to a place called Bar M Trails.
Yes. So this is, they also refer to it as Moab Brand, I discovered.
Where did I get Bar M from?
They're called Bar M.
Okay.
But it's, I saw like Bar M and Moab Brand kind of interchangeably or together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where they get the name Bar M.
But anyway, this is the place you want to start.
Yes. This would have been a much better start than Slick Rock just because it was a bit more like what we were used to. And there's enough different trail types there. You know, there's a really fun, really flowy blue-green loop that I did a different day. Anthony and I did a blue-black loop called the North 40, which is actually only about 4 or 5 miles, not 40, so that was nice. But that was really fun.
It's a very misleading name.
It is, but I love that trail. So that was actually the reason we ended up going there is that they have a lot of shorter trails that you can combine into a bigger loop. And that was important because that morning we did something that is very unheard of for Anthony, and that is we went on a hike.
Yeah, that's all you need to know about that. Moving on.
So to give you a little bit more information, Moab is right by Arches National Park, and I had really wanted to go out and do the hike to Delicate Arch. So we did that morning and found some trails to ride on in the afternoon. And originally we'd had a different plan for doing the hike. We're going to do it on our second day, but we got out there and started talking about plans. And one of the things that Anthony really wanted to do was the whole enchilada, which is kind of like the best known Moab trail, or maybe just as well known as Slick Rock, which is, well, you wrote it. Why don't you describe it?
Well, Slick Rock is just a cardio workout with like some cool views. The whole enchilada is an everything workout, an all day ride. It was 33 miles on my Garmin. Max altitude was 11,150 feet. And then it descended down to 4,000 feet. So it had 8,000 feet of descending over those 30 miles. It is a bonkers trail.
Yeah, and it's almost all downhill. And so getting up there, you can't just start from town. I mean, I guess you could start from town and ride up a road and then come back down. But typically you get dropped off at the top. And we had originally talked about both of us doing that, and I got out there and realized that this was not going to be a good idea, so that's when we started shifting plans. So instead of taking a shuttle up, I actually drove Anthony up to the top and dropped him off, and that was an experience in and of itself.
Yeah, the drive up, because they have multiple shuttle companies that go up like multiple times a day. So these gravel roads just get the crap beat out of them, and they are washboard like you would not believe. So you either go 5 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour. Otherwise, you just get shaken to crap.
Yeah. And then the last, like, what was it? 3 miles or something was really a one lane road, like decent sized rocks in it, pretty steep. Like, I was so glad that we had the Subaru with X mode and 9 inches of clearance and all wheel drive. Like, I would have been scared to take a car up that road.
Yeah. It was pretty rough.
I'm not sure I would have taken a car up that road.
It was an adventure for our vehicle as well. But Jen dropped me off, and then this is crazy. Jen is my wife. We are, like, married. And she just said, I'll see you at the bottom. Have a good day. Bye. And that's it. Just left me. My wife left me in the woods, guys.
It was really surreal because I was expecting, you know, they say, oh, expect to see other people on the trail. It's this really popular thing. And we get up to the top, and there's this parking lot, and it's like something I'd expect to find in, I don't know, Breckenridge. It's that kind of, you know, the pine trees and the really cool morning air, and there's nobody there. There's a trailhead sign with a map and a bathroom, and then this little winding, nice-looking, like, cross-country-style trail takes off from the parking lot. And I sat there and watched Anthony disappear into the trees and went, well, I hope I make it back down the hill in the car and he doesn't die on the bike.
Yeah, I think, yes. One of those two is much more dangerous.
Yes. I was really worried about driving back down that hill, though.
So, to go over the whole enchilada, because it was amazing. But it starts off at 10,500 feet. And then it climbs to 11,150 Burrow Pass is what it's called. And that climb is brutal because I live in Iowa. And so the last little hill, I just ended up walking up because my heart rate wasn't coming back down. And nope, not worth it. I had another 30 miles to go. I needed to just take it easy. So anyway, I got to the pass.
I think it's brutal even if you don't live in Iowa, because the few people we talked to about were all like, oh, did you make it up the last quarter mile? Like, I think that's an achievement just for anyone.
Yeah, if I was acclimated to even like 5,000 feet, I think I probably could have done it. But I just was not getting the air my body deserved. So I got to the pass and I thought, all right, now comes the easy part. And I was very wrong. The backside was so steep that my butt was over like my rear axle. Because my hands got tired because I was leaning too far forward. So I had to just keep scooting back and back until I was just hanging off the back of my bike. That was fun. And it's really popular. So the whole thing is just rutted out and bouncy. And all the turns are all, I don't know, rooty.
Mm-hmm.
But up in the Aspen, up in the mountain area, you have a bunch of roots. And so you have these trails that are rooty when you're used to desert trails. And it's just such a bizarre change.
There were like four distinct different areas on that trail, right?
Yeah. So the beginning of the trail was almost at tree line. I mean, you could look up and see the top of these mountains with no trees in the way. And then you came through the tree area, and that was beautiful because it was fallish, so the leaves were changing.
Was that all the aspens?
Yeah, the aspens. And some of those, like, you would go through a forest of these aspen trees that were all yellow. It was just the craziest thing. And then you got out to this, like, I don't even know what it would be called. It was like a plains, deserty thing,
mm-hmm.
where there weren't aspens, and it felt like you were riding through a cow field.
Almost like high desert.
Yeah. And I think the reason it felt like you were going through a cow pasture is because you were. There were actually cows there.
Yeah, we encountered several cows. I'm slightly scared of cows now.
I encountered them on my mountain bike at 10,000 feet. That was weird, and they just watched me. But after that, you get to the Cocopelli Trail. Like a jeep road almost that you can fly down and hurt yourself really bad. And then you get to Porcupine. And once I got to Porcupine, I was like, oh, I remember doing this 7 years ago. This will be the easy part. No, it was not the easy part. There is no easy part on this trail. Yeah. And it's 5 hours long.
I think I've heard that the top section and then Porcupine Rim are the like the most technical sections. And then in between, you just get shook around a lot.
So it's rated Black Diamond, and it's not necessarily because any individual section is too terribly hard. Like Porcupine Rim will ruin your day, but it's a 30-mile trail, and so you have to be on your game the entire time. Like each section might only be there's some sections that would only be a blue, and some that would just, I mean, there's a chunk of gravel for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the length that makes it brutal, and then you finish off with Porcupine Rim of all things, which I did by myself at the end of this ride, which is just stupid. So we did that the next day,
mm-hmm.
and that was fun as well. Anyway, I got down. I wrecked one time. I still have a bruise on my leg, but I was fine. And then the next day, we did Porcupine Rim. Da-da-da.
So yeah, I had really wanted to try the whole enchilada, but at the same time was being realistic with the fact that I'm probably not able to do a 33-mile ride right now like that. And I did not want to be a statistic of the idiot who tried to go do this and got stuck and had to be evacuated. So we got a shuttle we actually went to LPS. And the main shuttle companies, it's kind of strange. Like they talk about Porcupine Rim on their websites. But what they do is they go to the highest point in the whole enchilada that's open, which when we were out there, that was the top. So Burrow Pass, which is the same place that I dropped Anthony off on Tuesday. And there's not an option to get dropped off to start one of the lower sections. So there is a fairly new company that is working in Moab. It's Hazard County Shuttle. And they had the option to go really wherever we wanted to on the trail, which was incredibly handy for us. So we picked the Porcupine Rim option, and then we actually ended up getting dropped off at LPS, which is just above Porcupine Rim. Because that way, if you start at the Porcupine Rim trailhead, you have to climb up to get to the trail, kind of like what Anthony had at the start of the whole enchilada. So we picked to go up higher. I got to see some of the sections that Anthony had talked about from the day before, and then we got to just ride down.
What did you think of Porcupine Rim?
I thought it was insane. Like, it's so weird to just be kind of going through this fairly standard desert trail, and then all of a sudden you come out of the little shrubby trees and, oh, hey, a cliff.
Yeah, the thing I can't believe about just the area in general is they just kind of say liability is on you, have fun. I mean, you ride up to this stuff, and it's a literal 500-foot drop.
Yeah.
And there's nothing blocking it? There's nothing that warns you?
No, for the most part, I think, like, for us, it was, what, 14 miles that day?
I think is what we
recorded.
Maybe.
So, yeah, for the first probably 10 miles, I didn't feel uncomfortable with that at all. Like, you could always stay pretty far away from the edge. Like, there are places where you can go out and get a picture taken. Some of the famous Moab photos are on that trail. But it's like that's an offset from the trails. You have to choose to go over there and you don't have to. The last little bit, what they actually call like Porcupine Rim, it's not LPS or any of the other sections of trail. That one, like you get along the very edge of the cliff right above the Colorado River. And there was one time when I hit my bars on a rock to my left, and thank God I had my dropper post down and could, you know, throw my weight to the left as well, so I didn't go over the cliff. Which, also, this trail is the one that taught me how to use a dropper post.
Dropper post saves lives.
I don't think I could have made it down this trail without endoing if I hadn't been using a dropper post.
Yeah, the end of Porcupine Rim goes along this ridge. And there are sections where if you mess up, you're going to get messed up, like, real bad. I don't think there's any that you would, like, probably die on, but there are places in Moab where people have died from falling off cliffs.
Yeah, I think you'd have to mess up pretty badly, but I could see someone coming through like, oh, I'm a good rider, I can hit this at speed, and like not knowing the trail and just overshooting something and then crashing, and yeah, you could go off a cliff.
I also feel like Porcupine Rim tends to put you in your place before you get to the dangerous parts.
That's a good point.
Like, if you're an idiot, you tend to crash and burn up higher. And the thing with these trails is there's no, like, way out.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, well, I'm at mile 9 and I've decided I can't make it, so I'm going to hop on this road and go back down to town. Like, no, you're going down the trail.
Yeah, you're either limping back from where you came from or you're going to the end.
I have heard that they're putting in a trail a lot more like that. It wouldn't be for Porcupine Rim, but like if you're coming down the whole enchilada and you get to the point where I think where Porcupine Rim starts.
Like an access trail?
Yeah. They're putting in a trail that's more of like a blue rating than a black that takes you straighter back to town. Yeah, it's not so winding. It would be shorter. So that's a nope out option that's coming, but that's still, you know, not a paved road, not easy access. There's not a place for someone to come pick you up, really.
Jen.
Yes.
Do you have a dinger?
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. I do not have a dinger.
Oh, it's outside. I'm not going to get it. It's too far away. Anyway, what time is it?
It is Gear Talk time.
It is Gear Talk time with Tony and Jen. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Anthony, would you like to tell me about your gear failure on the whole enchilada?
Yeah, we didn't even mention this on the whole enchilada talk. So, guess what, guys? My rear brake decided to bleed itself on the trail.
How far into the ride?
Mile 3.
Out of what?
33.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was coming down the really steep part that I mentioned where I had to be really far back. And I actually, my front tire washed out and I just jumped off my bike. It wasn't a problem. But I looked at my rear brake and I saw that it was kind of wet. And I thought, well, that's not normal. And my rear brake kind of quit working as well. So I did 30 miles of the craziest trail with half a rear brake and a functioning front brake. And the other thing with brakes is that my front brake was super hot. So some people wonder what the point of hydraulic disc brakes are, or even disc brakes in general. Do you know what the point of them are, Jen?
I do, but you explain it better.
Well, rim brakes, they brake on the rim, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have trails that descend for 8,000 feet, what'll happen is your rims will get really, really hot. And do you know what happens to rubber when it gets really, really hot?
It doesn't do so well.
Yeah, it doesn't melt because it's vulcanized and, you know, physics. Mm-hmm. But it gets soft and then what they tend to blow up. Basically, rim brakes will blow up after they get too hot, which in Iowa doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So my disc brakes out there got super hot. And I'd lick my finger on my glove and I would touch them to see how hot they were. And this is a tip for people who deal with hot stuff, by the way. If you, like, lick your finger and touch something that's super hot, it'll boil off so fast that, like, it won't burn you. I do it with gloves, brake pads, exhaust manifolds on cars and stuff. It's called the Leidenfrost effect. Anyway, disc brakes, yeah, they can get as hot as they want. It doesn't really matter. They'll start shredding the brake pads, which mine did, and they'll start burning off the brake pads, which I'm pretty sure I smelled burnt brake pads. But, yeah, my gear talk, I guess, is more of a science talk about why disc brakes are so good and rim brakes are. They're fine, but they can cause trouble when you're going 8,000 feet downhill.
So my gear talk is also very specifically geared towards Moab, but in a different way. So in Iowa, like, the trails get kind of dusty, but not too bad. I mean, we're normally fighting them being too wet instead of being too dry. So anyhow, I have a fairly standard, like, I have to lube my chain once a month, if that, and it's good. And one of the things that I noticed really fast riding in the desert is that my rear cassette started making noises. It was, you know, I could tell that it was extremely dry, getting dusty, and just not a happy bike. So discovered that I can dump water on that just to get it back from the ride that I was on and kind of get all the dust washed off. But just be aware, if you're going to a place that has a lot of different conditions than what you're used to, you might have to change what you're doing with your bike.
Listen to your bike.
When it's squeaking at you.
Wow, I might even leave that in. That's funny. I've had to wash off my chain with water before. But out in the desert, that red dust, it gets everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow, it gunked up everything.
Yeah, and that's just, we never have to deal with that here. So it's not something that I'd really been mentally prepared for.
The gravel rides, we have to.
Yeah, I guess I take care of my gravel bike differently than my road or my mountain bike.
Yeah, I lubed my chain twice while we were out there.
Yep. But yeah, also, I just cannot say enough, if you're going to go ride these trails, especially on your own bike, like, make sure your dropper post works. If you don't have one, like, I highly recommend either getting one or renting a bike that has one for some of these trails, because that was it. I do not doubt that having the dropper post kept me from wrecking. It was insane.
Yeah, I had actually considered taking the dropper post off my bike because I just extra weight and I didn't use it. And I thought, well, this is dumb. And then I went to Moab and that sucker will be staying on there. I actually thought about buying a better one because that's how much I used it. I kept remembering drop to drop. Drop your seat, drop your position, and then drop your bike.
Yep. And then one other thing that was, you know, I think we might potentially change if we were to redo this trip in the future, is both of us were on cross-country carbon fiber race bikes, which are perfect for Iowa, but not so great for hucking it off of stuff. Although, I was just watching a video of someone else out in Moab, and they had the exact same bike that I did, so we're not the only person to take them out there.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. It's not like doing it on a fully rigid bike, which you can do. It's just a matter of how good do you want to feel at the end and how long do you want that bike to last?
Yeah.
Because if my bike, if I did that every day with my bike, I'd probably end up cracking the frame or blowing out a shock, just because it's just really rough on those bikes that have a shorter travel.
And I feel like for where I'm riding right now, like, my bike is perfectly fine. It can do just as much as I can. But if we were to keep going back and, you know, going off of bigger drops and things like that, I would definitely want a maybe more of an enduro-style bike, or at least an aluminum bike, so if I hit the frame on something, it's not just toast.
Yeah, and I'm a big proponent of it basically run what you brung.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got it, it's fine. It was just the only time that I've ridden anywhere where I thought, man, my bike's kind of wimpy. And that's, I mean, I've ridden quite a few places. So I think next time I might rent a bike out there just to try it out and see if it's any, or see how different it is.
Yeah, it would be really fun to have a bike to just go play with.
And then if I break it, it's your problem.
The Porcupine Rim, we did that on Wednesday. And then we were leaving on Thursday. And so originally had kind of left that day open of, well, maybe we'll just, you know, wake up. And we talked about driving over to Fruta and riding there. But what we ended up doing was a lot cooler than that.
Yeah, we ended up riding with Steve and Tess of Hardtail Party and Dusty Betty fame. Genesis luckily recognized Steve when we were at Slick Rock. He was actually, he just drove out there for the weekend because they live apparently 6 hours away.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like what we do for Bentonville.
Yeah. And then he came back with Tess and the little one.
Some other people too.
They were doing a kind of a group camping thing.
So yeah, we'd kind of been talking all week of, hey, if this works out, it'd be fun to ride with you guys. And it ended up that it did work out. So Thursday morning, we drove over to their campground and went on a ride.
Yeah, I thought they were already out there, but it turned out they just got there when we, or they had got there the night before when we mm-hmm. met them. And they were out at a campground, and we drove out through this little sand area.
I'm not sure it's technically a campground as much as it was just like open land.
Well, it's as much of a campground as they have out there. It yeah. was open area that you could camp at. And so we pull in, and we see these paragliders out in the distance. There were five of them, and I thought, no, that's kind of fun, and they were doing stupid stuff. So we come in and we drive and we see a guy waving us to go this way. It was Steve and we'd missed the turn. So I go to back up. And
once again, it's not exactly a turn as much as a flat place of desert to drive on.
Yeah, just drive off the road over here and park. And then these paragliders started coming towards us. And I've flown planes before. So my brain started kicking in plane mode of like, those are too low. Those are way too low. Oh, God, they're going to land on my car. And I mean, they were probably 10 to 20 feet above us. Like, in plane land, that is basically, you have an emergency. And then, as I was backing up, there was a car behind me, and a car coming in front of me, so I just stopped. I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, we have this insane photo of this truck coming towards us down the road, kicking up dust, and there are three paragliders that you can see, like, right behind the truck. There were five all told. I think one had already gone past and was behind us. It was just like, wait a second, what's going on here?
So when we got over to Steve and he said, man, it's like Mad Max out here. And that is exactly what it felt like. Just people doing whatever the heck they wanted. Craziness. It turns out they weren't crashing. That's just how they roll. It's terrorizing cars and flying 10 feet above the ground.
They probably had fun confusing us.
Oh, they confused me very much. Anyway, Steve and Tess. Steve was actually really cool.
You say actually, like you weren't expecting him to be cool.
Well, there's a certain kind of mountain biker that I don't care to hang out with, the bro mountain biker. Like, oh, let's send it off big cliffs, brah. And I always worry that new people are going to be like that. I have yet to meet anybody who is like that.
I typically don't worry about this. I usually don't encounter the female version of that, and I ignore the guys if they are that way. So I was not concerned about this at all.
Well, I was, and Steve ended up being super cool.
So yeah, we had thought that there's going to be a bigger group ride, and I think that might have been the original plan. It ended up that we just rode with Steve and Tess and went up to Navajo Rocks, which was probably only 3-4 miles from where they were staying. Did kind of just a partial shuttle, so left our car at the bottom and then rode up to the top with them and the bikes. And where Anthony had been concerned about hanging out with people, I was like, oh my goodness, these are well-known mountain bikers. They're way more technical than me. I'm just this kid from Iowa who doesn't even ride my bike like all the time. Like, I'm not a serious biker. I just do this for fun. I'm going to die. No, it was like perfect. I think at the end, they did slow down for me just a little bit, but they did not make me feel like that at all. It was cool. We stopped in the middle of the ride and Steve found this one place. He's like, oh, that's a bonus line. You can walk your bike up and ride it back down. And Anthony and Steve and Tess all did that. And I watched and got some photos and caught my breath. And it was really fun. I think that might actually have been my favorite trail. So we will definitely be going back there. Navajo Rocks is technically a loop. So you start at the bottom and then, you know, climb up for 7 or 8 miles and then ride down for, 8 or 9 miles. We only did the downhill portion of it just to kind of save time because we had to leave it that afternoon. But no, it was incredible, and I'm so glad that they showed us that because it hadn't been one of the trails that we had planned on doing.
I like riding with people from the area. I mean, they lived in Utah for a while, and they were in Arizona at the time. So they kind of knew what they were doing more, and it's interesting to ride with people to see what the style of that area is, if you will. Like, Bentonville, it's kind of more chill because you can ride up and then do fun stuff. Where here, a lot of people we ride with are much more into it, into going as hard as they can.
Go, 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 go.
Yeah, because that's all there is. There is no sessioning. There's no jumping.
Yeah.
And so then going out there is interesting because Steve stopped a couple times and was like, oh, we could do this line or go that way. And that's literally not possible where we're from.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa, you go as hard as you can. Bentonville, you go to the top and ride fun stuff. And then Moab, you go to the top, ride fun stuff, and then say, I wonder if I can throw myself off that. And it's fun to ride with people who know the area.
Oh, yeah, that was so cool because there are just things that, you know, half this trail, or not half, but at least portions of this trail were kind of like slick rock where it's, you're just riding over this rock that has paint markings on it, and that's technically the trail, but you don't have to stay on top of the paint markings. So there are places where you could go, you know, 3 feet to the left and it's a totally different trail. And it was really fun getting to ride behind those people and see how they approached it.
Yeah, that's not to say that you can always ride off the trail. There are some, like, the sandy sections where you, it's, like, do not ride off the trail.
Oh, yeah, do that on the hard rock surfaces only. They really, really, really don't like it when you mess up the deserty, sandy sections.
It's actually illegal.
Yeah, it messes with the ecosystem, so.
Yeah, they have, like, microbiomes or something.
Yeah, I do not know nearly enough about it. I just know it's a no-no, and it's important enough that they have it posted everywhere, so don't do that. But no, that was really fun. And then, so that was kind of the end of our actual Moab trip. We left right after that ride, filled up with gas for the lovely drive back through eastern Utah. And then we had planned, I think we mentioned earlier, to ride in Fruta on Friday. And kind of, you know, we were talking about the different things that happen on bike trips during the last episode and just being open to changes. And this was definitely one of those times where it's like, okay, my cassette was giving me more issues by that time. We actually determined I probably need a new cassette at this point. Anthony didn't have functioning brakes, really, like front or rear. And they were moderately functioning.
Yeah, I had half functioning brakes. It was enough.
Yeah. So he probably couldn't, like both of us probably could have ridden on our bikes, but they weren't in great shape, and we weren't really feeling like going to a new place and trying to figure out a whole new trail system and then riding when we were tired and maybe not at our best. So we went back to Boulder. It was fun.
What was fun? The drive through the mountains?
No, it was nice. Okay, I shouldn't say fun. We went back to Boulder and got to sleep in a bed that we know because we stayed with some friends and chill and not worry about our bikes falling apart. And at that point in the trip, that was kind of where I was at mentally and didn't want to push it and end hating it instead of being like, yeah, this was awesome. We should do it again.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of not doing that last ride because that one last ride is where things go horribly, horribly wrong. So yeah. If I think, oh, I'm gonna get this one last thing in, you know, I think about that twice because that's when your tire blows up and you're stuck in the mountains.
It's funny. It's actually apparently a pretty well-known skiing superstition that you never say this is the last run, because if you say this is my last run, that's when you crash and break your leg. So it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this and then maybe be done. And, you know, you kind of don't tempt fate of like, oh, yeah, we're fine. We can go do one more thing.
Man, I thought our Moab episode was going to be super long. That's like a normal episode length.
Well, yeah, it was a lot of stuff fit into one time.
Yeah, and a lot of Moab just is the same. Like, once you get there, like, the pictures are really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see it, it's like, okay, it's a rock. It's a slick rock. It's a drop. It's a jump.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. It's not like, you know, Bentonville, where the trails can be drastically different. They're all natural.
Yeah, and I actually think that was one of the really cool things about Moab is you got to get out and see the natural features. But yes, it's hard to talk about, oh, this drop is so different from that drop. It's like, no, it's red rock and dust.
The cool part about it that you could talk about is all the different lines that some places had.
Like, oh, yeah, that was fun to see.
Yeah, like I think you could ride Porcupine Rim 17 times and take 17 different lines through it, which was really unique. But when you're describing it, it's like, ah, there was a bunch of drops.
And this one was 2 feet, and this one was 3 feet.
And that's the thing with Moab, is there's a lot of places where you actually have to walk your bike unless you're really good.
Yeah.
Because there are rock drops and rock gardens like you wouldn't believe.
It was so cool. And once again, I don't think there is any possible way that I could have done this trip if I had not just done, you know, the 2 days of drop training that we did in Bentonville. That was so, so, so helpful. So if any of you are considering going to Bentonville, like that's the thing I would say is make sure you're comfortable of going off of drops. Like you don't have to do the big ones, I think the one that I went off, there's the biggest was like 2-ish feet. But a lot of it's just like rock step downs of, you know, anywhere from 6 inches to a foot, just almost like stair steps. And if I hadn't been able to ride those, I would have walked half of Porcupine Rim.
What I was thinking is how helpful going off curbs were. I've talked about it before, mm-hmm. and I sound like a crazy person to myself. But jumping your bike off curbs teaches you everything you need to know to jump your bike off something that's 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
You just have to do it so that you land flat and don't rotate. And it, I don't know. I was thinking that when I was biking, like, man, curbs really help me as I'm flying 2 feet through the air.
I would say, like, don't go from being like, oh, I can roll off a curb to, oh, obviously I can do Porcupine Rim. Like, put some stuff in the middle there.
Nah, do but, it. Let us know how it goes.
I don't want that on my conscience.
I'll blame it on you. It'll be fine. Won't be on mine.
But, yeah, anything else you want to add about Moab, Anthony?
The scenes are amazing. The trails are amazing, but they all are very, very similar.
I feel like we kind of just scratched the surface for, like, actual trails to go on. But yeah, within a week, we're able to get a really good feel for riding in that area.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not as if we rode all the trails out there. There's probably,
we could ride for a month straight out there, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, like the Cocopelli Trail alone is a 150-mile bike-packing trail.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you want to ride for a long time, go out there. If you want to ride for downhill, go out there. If you want to ride in the desert or the mountains or the trees, go out there. It's got pretty much everything.
Yeah, but no, it's really fun. So we are definitely planning on going back. And I do think, you know, some of you guys might have seen us setting up the truck so we can camp in the back of it instead of towing the camper. And I'm guessing that next time we go out, we probably will be taking the truck and camping. That was one of the really weird things to me outside of biking is just there is so much open space. It's, you know, BLM land and you can go disperse camping or they have like this kind of designated camping area. And, you know, there are fires going on and not in Utah, but there are a couple of fires in Colorado. And so they had very strict rules on that. You had to have contained fires or no fires, but otherwise you kind of just find a place where it's allowed and set up a tent and you now have a campground.
Yeah, that is one thing we had not anticipated beyond biking. When we go places to bike, we go there to bike. And so generally we try to have good accommodations outside of that because we don't care to just rough it for the sake of it. But there's no humidity out there. So 80 degrees is beautiful.
And it's a desert. So yeah, it might be hot during the day, but it gets cold at night. Like, I don't think it's really possible to fully equate it to camping in Iowa where everything is hot and sticky and mosquito-y.
Yeah, next time we go out, we will probably be camping. We talked about that quite a bit while we were out there, just how much camping room there is. And
how cool it would be to just wake up in the middle of the desert with the sunrise. Like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If you are camping in Bentonville, you wake up and it's like, okay, we're in Bentonville.
In a campground.
But in Moab, you wake up and it's like, oh, we're in a giant canyon. Where if you get a condo, you wake up and you're like,
it's a condo.
it's the bedroom. All right.
It did have a very nice shower and hangout area. But overall, I think next time we definitely will be camping.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out the shower section or part of camping because Jen's a real skank.
Oh, thanks, honey.
All right. Well, next time we go out, we're going to go camping. If you like camping, Moab is obviously the place for you.
If you like biking, you definitely should check out Moab, even if it's just once.
If you're from Iowa, try to get those drops down first.
Mm-hmm.
And realize you're going to be out there all day. It's not a race.
And maybe look into, you know, if you're like us and have that carbon fiber race bike, it might be worth renting a bike just for peace of mind and, you know, having a more comfortable ride down.
Yep. Well, that's all I have for this episode, I believe. And look at that. We have a good amount of time now.
That sounds good. Well, guys, until next time, you can find us on Instagram at bottom.bracket.biking. We'd love to hear ideas, suggestions, places we should ride, funny stories, anything like that. Have a good day and ride dirt, not mud.
More coffee!